I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and welcome to episode number 11 of the Create More podcast, hosted by me, Ben Stewart, interviewing the creative minds behind inspirational ideas. On this fortnight's podcast, I'm going to be talking all about podcasts. And to be more specific, I will be talking exactly about my podcast, exactly how I did it, and why I did it. I've had quite a few questions on Twitter about it, and part of the very original idea of the podcast was that it was a behind-the-scenes look at different industries in and around London. And this is exactly what gets me really excited, is to find out more about industries and things that I literally know nothing about. I mean, since doing the podcast, the amount of experiences that I've had, that there's just no way I would have had without it. I mean, I've gone to artists, structural engineers, architects, musicians. I've been to special effects houses, animation houses, all to try and get more podcasts and more interviews. And I realized as I went on, the reasons I was doing it was I was genuinely excited to find out how they did their jobs. And I've had quite a few questions on Twitter to talk about how I've done this podcast and why I've done this podcast. So, so there's no famous names on this podcast. It is just going to be me, and I hope that over about half an hour, 40 minutes, that's something you want to listen to. If not, go back to any number of the other 10 that I've done, which I'm really proud of. We've had architects, Ken Shuttleworth. We've had musicians and Scroobius Pitt. We've had artists and David Batchelor. We've had loads of really interesting people, and they're 10 episodes I'm really proud of, and that was series one. And I've already lined up 5 for series 2, and something that I really wanted to do was, this is kind of an intermediate, but behind the scenes. So the principle of it was finding this behind the scenes idea, and something that I find really interesting is to find out that it's really hard work coming up with like cool ideas. And I feel very much that this is just a step in a much longer journey, and I wanted to try loads of different things. So this is just me interviewing myself essentially and explaining to other people. And even if only 5 people listen to it and really enjoy it, then do you know what? I'm actually really happy with that. I'll go into the podcast more about how I did it, but essentially I started off, and on the first day, I got 60 downloads, which I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. And then I'll explain why and how, but that very quickly dribbled off to about 1 or 2. So for about 2 months, I just had 1 or 2. And you know what? I actually was fine with that, because there was no pressure on me, absolutely nothing, and I loved it. And then slowly, and I'll explain how, started picking up marketing, started getting involved with iTunes, and then suddenly I was having 150 downloads a day. Stressed me out, I really did. So and I don't know why. So having this kind of stopgap has made me like look back and realize what I really enjoy about the podcast. So oh my God, and do you know what? I always forget to say exactly the same thing at the beginning of my intros, and I finally remembered after the end of the series on one where I've got no one famous to interview and you're just listening to me. But I really want to say thank you to Acast. And if you're listening to this on iTunes or SoundCloud, that's fantastic. You know, that's a brilliant place to go and get podcasts from. Essentially, with Acast, as you're listening, I talk about a podcast or talk about an image or talk about a building or talk about anything. And on your phone or on your web browser, the image pops up. And I think particularly for this kind of very visual-based medium that I like kind of exploring, it just works so well to have these kind of images and to kind of create a story and stuff. So Acast have been brilliant, and again, it's all free. I mean, that's the great thing. I'm sure if someone offered me money for advertising, I would be well up for it. Why not? But no one has, and that's fine as well. I really do just do it because I really enjoy doing them. Like, I got so excited knowing I had some time today to do this. So I hope that comes across in the podcast. And so the following podcast will be all about episodes 1 to 10. It'll be about the beginning of why I did the podcast, why I think I like podcasts, and then all the equipment I used. And then at the end of the podcast, I will explain exactly who I've got lined up for episode, for series 2, which is really exciting. So stay tuned, and I really hope you enjoy it. And I've remembered again. Tweet me at Create More Podcast. Ask any questions or email me directly. I've got the link on there. But it'd be great to hear more from you guys. So to the subscribers, and we have well over 200 now, thank you so much for subscribing. It really, really helps. And I got to a point where I think a lot of people may have just been clicking on it, you know, listening to 5, 10, 20 minutes. I have no idea. And then, you know, maybe not listen to the rest. But I do know that the people who are subscribing, that to me is a more important statistic. So to the subscribers out there, thank you so much. And please share this podcast with other people. That'd be really helpful. And so enjoy. Okay, well, I'm actually going to have some sort of intro now. If you're still listening, that means you are quite curious about podcasts, and why shouldn't you be? I do think that they are. I'm obviously listening to them all the time, so I really feel that they're a very democratic way to listen to broadcasting now, because there's no filter on podcasts. I mean, the only reason I don't swear more is because you have to put an explicit tag on iTunes, and it just. There was no reason not to, but I do think this is a pre-podcast thing, but I do think it's interesting that if you look at the way Twitter and YouTube and all these different things, anyone has a platform. Like, anyone can reach to anyone. There's no, like, I guess the funnels of information are changing, and I feel that when I first listened to podcasts, probably back at uni about 5 years ago, I used to listen to things like the Chris Moyles podcast. I used to love Chris Moyles, but that would just be a highlights reel. A lot of them would be highlights reels, actually. So they'd be like, it would be another way to get people to listen to your radio show. And that was one way to do it. But then you look at the kind of the Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant podcast, and obviously Mr. Carl Pilkington, and they were the kind of first ones. Not only was theirs absolutely comedy genius, but they were really the first ones to, well, one, they monetized it, which must have made them an absolute fortune. You know, we get 1 million downloads per podcast. Let's just charge £1 per podcast, which seems like we'd never do that now. But back then, people were happy to pay that. So, but then there was a bit of a lull. I don't know if I didn't get into it, but this was... I started getting back into them about a year ago. This is while I was working at Broadgate. It was quite a stressful big project, and you know, you're downstairs in a basement in the underground car park area, and you know, you're working away in this like concrete box, and I just needed something to listen to, and kind of music, you know, was a bit too distracting, and so one of my colleagues was like, "You should listen to." The Nerdist podcast, and I guess I was quite used to BBC style podcasts, you know, very slick production, something that seemed 1 million miles away for me to try and do myself. That wasn't even in the back of my head, but I listened to, you know, like really big famous productions and stuff, you know, if you think of all the different type of documentary channels and stuff, you know, really informative. I listened to 99% Invisible, which is another amazing podcast all about how good design should be invisible. And they explain all these backgrounds about queuing strategy in Disney and stuff. And they were brilliant, but, you know, really kind of really thought-provoking, really interesting. Listen to the Nerdist one. And there's just a guy having a chat with a really famous actor for an hour of a famous actor's time. Amazing. And had like, it genuinely felt like a pub chat. So I was like, wow, that's cool. What an amazing thing to do. Like, why haven't they done one in the, you know, why isn't there one in the UK or anything? Again, there was nothing in the back of my head about doing a podcast. But if you're interested in this type of podcast, I'm pretty sure you will have heard of The Nerdist anyway, but if you haven't, the one that got me really excited, there was two very specific ones, and they're actually both by movie directors, which is interesting, but I was thinking about that, and I do think movie directors are similar to architects in a way, and nowhere near as cool. Architects are nowhere near as cool as film directors, but I mean, like, architects of a big project very rarely do any individual thing other than kind of direct the movement of the project. And I feel that directors have to have an eye on lots and lots of different mediums, you know, like advertising, directing, all those different things are on top of their normal job. And I feel that architecture, especially these bigger projects, it's all about selling a story, you know, like, and I feel directors have exactly the same thing. And they're really no different, you know, the actual background stuff is the same. But I listened to John Favreau, who's the director of Iron Man, Swingers, and Chef. And, oh man, it was so good. He was explaining, you know, like, this is how I started. I started as a low-level director and I worked my way up. And, you know, I messed up loads. And, you know, I felt the best times was where, you know, I just did it purely because it was something I loved. And people liked it. And then I did another one, people didn't like it. And man, I just got pushed around. And then, you know, I thought, sod it, I'll just do it this way. And really inspiring. And then, the one that kind of really caught my attention was the one afterwards I listened to by Kevin Smith, who's, I'm sure you've heard of him, the director of Clerks and Dogma and stuff. Man, and that one was so good because they, he just did. He was like, why would anyone want to look watch a film about me and my mates talking absolute bullshit? And he did it and it was brilliant. And it made me think, you know, like right now, why wouldn't anyone watch a film about me and my mates talking? I know that's utterly ridiculous. No one would do it because that genuinely would be really boring. But that was that mindset of him just going, yeah, sod it. I want to watch it. My mates want to watch it. So sod it. I'm going to do it. And he had this really cool phrase. He was like, man, you just got to find something that you're like, you'll die if you don't do. And he was really over animated about it. But he was like, you know, I just knew if I didn't make a film, oh, I'd die if I knew I went through my whole life never having done that before. But I'm pretty sure I scaled it down a bit. It got me thinking, having worked at Make for quite a long period of time, I'd started to build up a few contacts. But, you know, very, very, very early contacts. And I really wanted to, I honestly wanted to talk to them more. Like, I guess I'm just really, really curious about what other people do and how they do it. Like, I really like finding out how other people's jobs works because I'm so narrow-minded when it comes to things I'm interested in. So at uni, I was obsessed with the architecture side, but really no one else's other than my own bits that I wanted to look at. And then suddenly I come into Make. And so, for example, like in my first practice, I was sat in a room working on one building with two other architects. And they both lived in Birmingham. I lived just outside of Birmingham for a year. We all did very similar things. So, you know, like my little world of things that I was aware of were just going to work, talking about the same buildings, having very similar lives and coming home. Now at Make, like the current project I'm on, I sit next to a guy called Dragon from Skopje and he's done Macedonia. He's done a TED talk. I sit next to a guy called Zach, who's from Canada, and he's a tutor at the Bartlett. This is all on top of our day job. I find out like people at Make have done Kickstarter campaigns. People at Make have like done art projects. They've done these amazing sporting things. Like, just it suddenly made me feel like, oh God, I'm like, just architecture isn't enough. And I was a really negative way of thinking about it. So I didn't want to come home and do more architecture. Like, it's so all encompassing during the day. And I really wanted to kind of do something else. And I do remember something my old boss told me. This is not at Make. This is at my old practice in Birmingham. He's like, Ben, you talk too much and you're way too nice to people. And that was like a derogatory way of saying, well, one, I guess he was probably implying I wasn't particularly involved in what I was doing. And two, that I was just super nice to people, but would want to get in with people and with contractors and stuff. That made me a bit of a pushover. But, you know, I learned my lesson. So my part one, but you know, turn your weakness into your positives, I guess. So then on iTunes, it said, well, if you like Chris Hardwick on Nerdist, you might also like Scroobius Pip. And, you know, I've repeated it. I'm repeating myself a bit. But if you haven't listened to Scroobius Pip podcast, like, that's a... The whole podcast wouldn't have happened if I hadn't have kind of carried on with what I'm about to say, which was... Okay, so I'd never actually heard of Scroobius Pip. Never heard of him. So, you know, I did tell him this. But there was him interviewing Russell Brand, Zane Lowe, Simon Pegg, a guy I'd never heard of, with a stutter, choosing to talk to an hour with really famous people. And I thought, all right, I've got to be able to do that. Come on. So I thought, you know, obviously later on I find out he's really famous. He's done a radio show for a year interviewing people. So that's why his podcast was so good. But it did stick in my head. So I spoke to my colleague, Craig, and we were like, I come up with a lot of ideas. I guess that's another frustrating thing. I have hundreds of ideas. And normally to my wife, I feel like one of those like kooky inventors who like invents some sort of totally useless tool that never gets used, but he's obsessed with it. And I was just getting more and more frustrated that I would just come up with an idea and then I just about to do it and I'd go, yeah, do you know what? That's stupid. Like, I wanted to do a Kickstarter campaign for like an inflating balloon that glows in the river as part of my thesis project. I can't be bothered to do that. And then I wanted this thing called the fairy tray in Alexandra Palace, where they put like motion activated fairy lights in all the trees in the kind of really dark part of the foresty area. I was like, I could go to the council. Yeah, I don't know how to do that. And so I just kept getting annoyed, and then I spoke to Craig and he was like, well, you know, I actually can't remember who suggested this, the idea of doing a podcast. But when Craig said it, it really stuck in my head, and I thought about it on and off for a couple of weeks. And I thought about, do you know what? I'm going to do a podcast. And then I was like, I don't know, let's do a podcast. And then I had a cup of coffee. The reason I say this is I normally tend to have an intense, furious 45 minutes of ideas making while I've had a coffee, and then slowly over the rest of the day, oh God, why did I just send all those emails out after a coffee? Way too much energy. But I sent an email to Mr. Scroobius Pip, you know, finding out he was famous, had like 100,000 Twitter followers, and, you know, done his own music videos, had millions of views on YouTube, didn't expect a response back, and he responded within 20 minutes. I literally said to him, I'm thinking of a podcast. I really like your podcast. No, I didn't sound like that. But I did ask him, you know, did you have any advice? How do you organize podcasts? I mean, I guess you just interview people, but do you sign release forms? Like, do you know, you take photos of them? Do you need to sign anything? Like, do you ever have to cut it? Do they ever stop the interviews? You know, I asked him like quite a few quite in-depth questions. Bearing in mind, I am a nobody. So he responded in like 20 minutes. So I was like, holy shit. And he said, never signed a release form. I've never had to. Always getting really well with the people. Just if you're worrying about it, just do it. Because he loves doing the podcast. And you can tell by the way he does the interviews and stuff. So I was like, sod it. I'm going to do it. And then, so where to start? I was like, well, do you know what? Like, I go out every lunch with Craig at lunch. That's an hour. How hard can it be to talk for an hour? This was naive Ben, who loves the idea of something coming through thick and strong there. And, you know, Craig was like, well, he was saying, you know, you should do it, but, you know, why are you doing it? What do you want the name to be? You know, we started asking all these questions. And then I was like, what do I want it to be about? And then the one that Craig really asked me, which did freak me out, he was like an hour's like quite a long time to fill. What are you going to talk about? And that worried me. The idea of like empty podcast audio in a room with two people when you've run out of things to say freaked me out really badly. So I was like, right, what am I going to call it first? How do we even know I can do a podcast? Can I even interview someone? Like, you know, it's one thing to say I'm going to sit down and interview someone for an hour. It's a very different thing to do it. But I'll start with the name. create more. So originally, while I was at Make, I was doing a project for my mum. We were designing, renovating a double garage on our house into a library. My mum's an MP and has like a house in London. She needs somewhere in Birmingham, and she has thousands of books she's collected over the years as like a law tutor and stuff. So she wanted to like consolidate all that, and I was like, she was like, "Do you want to do it?" And I was like, "Yeah, I want to do it." And I had, you know, these wonderful ideas of like, "Oh, I could do it under my own brand." And so I came up with this idea of Plaid Architecture, or Plaid Designs, PLAYD, and that was my Twitter handle for ages. And I loved this idea of having this kind of separate entity from Make, you know, parallel with Make, that was very much my own personality. So that, I think, was a big thing. It was just not worrying about what other people thought and just doing something purely for myself. And I also saw a Google thing of this idea of like 80-20, so 80% work, 20% kind of side projects, which help your work as you feed back into it. And Make have been, they couldn't have been more supportive for everything that I've done. So I owe a huge amount to them. So I started this idea of Plaid, and PLAYD, and it was this idea of Plaid with design. Play with design, that was the principle behind it. And play with design, I was going to do kind of fun, in inverted commas, architecture. So I love, my mum's German, so they really like quite colourful, powerful colours. I mean, especially if you go abroad, you suddenly realise that we Brits have a very kind of white, cream, pastel colours. And then in Germany, it's like these really like amazing like glass colours, like bright red. This is in Bavaria, I should point out. So in like deep, deep Bavarian German. But I loved all that. So I started looking more at like how is colour used. And it was, I'd done this thing with Make called the Doll's House, and I'd done like a rainbow coloured piece of thread of a star that went through, and I loved doing it. And so this idea of play with design, and then I started thinking of different names of the podcast, like the Plaid Podcast. Oh, that's, I like that, Plaid Podcast. But then I realized it meant nothing. You know, everyone would misspell it. No one would know what it was. And then I came up with a tagline, which was stop consuming, start creating. And this was a lot of this was a reaction to where I was currently working, which was a very kind of, very intense, serious environment, and there's like a pressure release. Just kept buying pointless crap, or like, you know, it was really important that I had to buy the latest thing, and it was, you know, it was bugging me that I kept doing it. So I said, stop consuming, start creating. And I was like, the stop consuming, start creating podcast. That sounds crap. Let's just ditch the stop consuming, slightly negative, because, you know. Corporate consumerism, I guess, is how the whole world goes around. So I was like, start creating podcast, create more of anything. Got it. And honestly, the second I had that name, I felt it was it's kind of a very simple and easy to understand name, and that's something that people have really connected to. So if you're thinking of starting a podcast, the name is like, it's not super important, but mine's kind of, I could have called it the Ben Stewart Architecture Podcast. But well, one, I didn't want it just to be about architecture. For me, it's about storytelling. And I've realized that as we've gone on, the things that I really love are storytelling. And as I go through each of the podcasts, everyone who I've interviewed has this wonderful way of like creating images that create this like quite evocative stories, and that's that story, once it's sold to someone, it's kind of an idea in their head, and they, you know, like, I don't know, it's a really powerful thing. And so this idea of create more was general enough that it meant I could interview loads of different people. And as it went on, I just realized, like, I don't know how to do that. I want to find out more about that person. I would love to find out how to start run a big practice. I would love to find out how do you become a musician? I know that sounds really stupid. Obviously, you should pick up an instrument, become a musician. But like, more like, how do you sell that creative interest? So I kept saying creative entrepreneurs. And that was a big thing. That create more behind the scenes of creative entrepreneurs. That was my like tagline, right? So And then, so once I had that, I had a really strong idea of what I wanted to do. And then, you know, if you've listened to the Scroobius Pit podcast, I copy that format almost exactly because I felt it worked really, really well. I loved finding out more about personalities. And the Nerdist one is exactly the same as that one. And then the Joe Rogan one's a much longer version of that one. And it's kind of these lengthy podcasts, you know. I imagine that a lot of people will have stopped listening by now, but there'll be a small group who tweet and chat to me who do listen. And I'll get onto it later on and I'll talk about it more. But it's like, who am I doing this podcast for? Am I trying to generate as many listeners as possible? Trying to please this invisible crowd? Or do I do exactly what I want to do? And hopefully there'll be a small number of people that enjoy it. And that was a really big thing. Going back to the Kevin Smith podcast, he was like, with niche audiences now and with the entire internet, he's like, you only need 1,000 people a month. And that's a brilliant core amount of people who will talk to you and engage with you. And 1,000 people is really good. I mean, if you just want to make money, then, you know, there's other ways. I could split this into 4 50-minute podcasts, release one every couple of days or every couple of weeks, or whatever. But I didn't want to do that. Like, there will be a small amount of people who listen to this regularly, and I know there is, and they're the people I'm doing this for. And I kept comparing myself to Scroobius Pip's podcast because I had this kind of connection with him that I would email him each time I would do stuff. So, and I kept, and obviously he's got really famous people. He's really famous. So he actually, when I spoke to him, he was like, well, I actually thought you have to be doing a podcast for a year before it gets famous. And I actually should have had that clear in my head when doing the podcast, because it's kind of taken the pressure off me, and I'll come into that more. But so that's going to be the first third. I'm going to split this podcast into 3 acts, but I just thought I would, there's something else that I thought was quite important was, so this idea of kind of incorporating ideas. So yeah, I was working at, Make, and we were in Arup's kind of temporary offices between working our old office and our new office that we're currently in. And it was quite a bland office. It was quite like, you know, corporately boring. It was very white and really good acoustics, and that meant it sounded like a library. And we were way too few people spread over way too much of space. So something that I really wanted to do was this, I called it promoting personalities. And again, this kind of, I feel, led on to what would become the podcast, but the idea was there, but the implementation of the idea was wrong. And I chose this kind of wall, really prominent wall in our reception area. And I said, everyone in the office gets like a 300 mil by 300 mil square on that wall. And inside that square, you can do whatever you want. You know, you can do a piece of art, you can do a sculpture, you can do a picture. And, you know, every time someone came in, you'd see this wall of different people's kind of pictures and stuff. And I love this idea of lots of ideas, you know, loads of different personalities and ideas. And then I went to the director and said, and he was like, well, it's not really something we want to do. Got different ideas that were, you know, something more of architecture. And I was like, oh, okay. And then, do you know what? It came around 2 years later. I was like, that's what the podcast is. It's promoting personalities. So I love the idea of loads of different personalities under one roof. And if you look up my logo, so as I came up with Create More, I came up with a sketchy one and stuff, but then you've got to try and grab people's attention. So I came up with a really strong, bold title, Create More Podcast, and kind of like open lettering. And then the idea of it, the kind of, I went through loads of iterations, but the one I settled on was this lots of different angled triangles, all different colors. And this was this idea of like all different, you know, on their own, they're one certain thing, but actually there's this beautiful image of lots and lots and lots of different colours all making up one piece, which is kind of where I wanted the podcast to go. You know, in a couple of years' time, imagine if I've done 30 podcasts. I mean, that's such a diverse range of people I'd love to try and get. So, yeah, that is kind of the premise and how I did, how the kind of podcast originally started and I got the name. So then, you know, where to go from there? You know, like, how the hell do I do one? So, I needed to rehearse and practice. So much harder than it thinks. So I thought, right, who do I know that's serious enough to be intimidating that I should try and interview? So I was thinking around and we went on holiday with my mum and my family, and as my mum's a Labour MP, Gisela Stewart for Edgbaston, and she brought her campaign manager along because this was just before the election. So this was, I guess, a couple of months before the election in 2015. So, I mean, we were on holiday, but her and her campaign manager were, sure, they were somewhere warm, but they definitely were not on holiday. And man, they were so intense together. I mean, they were like kind of constantly chatting and stuff about the election and how, you know, they're being really intense. And I actually don't really know very much about politics. So they were talking and I thought, man, if I can control those two talking for about half an hour, I'll record it. So I set my phone on. I got like a podcast app, naturally. What's the first thing you do when you want to do a podcast? So I got the podcast app, you know, walked up to the table, slid it in the middle, and then just started asking Caroline a few questions, and they both looked at me. And, you know, I was asking from a totally naive point of view. And I was like, well, if I can ask these guys questions, then that, you know, if I can control those two, then I surely can control someone my own age and my own experience. So I slid the phone in and ended up like asking them all about their kind of the campaign strategy and like why my mum became an MP, why Caroline became a campaign manager, like all. I really enjoyed it. And so like after 40 minutes, I let them carry on talking, and I went upstairs and listened back to the audio on my iPhone. And that was the first time I'd heard my own voice. And I've got used to it now. And I love it. No, the first time I heard my voice, it's tinny and raspy. I guess everyone has that feeling. Yeah, so I listened to it and I was like, oh God, what if people just find my voice really annoying? Ooh, I don't know. Anyway, so I kept that recording and that was really good. That gave me a lot of confidence. So then I went on and I was like, all right, I need some equipment. So I emailed Mr. Scroobius Pittmeyer. I guess he's basically become my mentor in this podcast. I'm sure he doesn't think like that, but I do. And so when I actually worked with the project, I designed like a recording studio for him, a very small one out in his garden. It was brilliant. It kind of, I got to work with him and it was really interesting to kind of see how he worked. And he showed me his podcast equipment. And man, it was really, really expensive. It was like BBC grade recording equipment. I was like, oh Jesus, that's like $3,000 or $4,000 worth of equipment. I don't have that. But if you're listening to this and you want to know what I would suggest for podcast equipment, now seems like the perfect time to go into it. So if you've been listening just to find out what equipment I've been used, you've really had to listen to quite a lot of podcasts already. But so this is the principle of how I wanted to do it. I was told by my work that I could use a lapel mic, which is a little microphone that sits on your shirt or your jumper. And they can get quite good audio. But I strongly believe that a good podcast should have really good audio. And that's something that people have kind of been quite surprised about mine, is that, you know, a few of the podcasts were quite difficult because of the environment I was in. But actually, when I'm on my own, like recording now, I'm really impressed with the quality. And I don't think it sounds that much different from the more professional ones recording wise. And that's because the lapel mics are good. But if someone moves around, I mean, you can hear this. If I come really close, you can hear like, that's me like move my shirt around and stuff. Like they're so sensitive. And if people move around, people generally tend to be quite animated while they're talking. It rustles and it's really loud. And they're not very bassy. I don't mean like Barry White bassy, but I just mean there's that extra level of quality I feel that you can hear. And I also, I wanted to create a sense of drama when we're doing the podcast. And by that, I mean, I wanted to come across as professional. If I just sat a little microphone on the side with two little lapel mics and just had a little sketchbook, it would feel very much like I was just some random guy. And I didn't ever want the other person to feel like they were wasting their time sitting down with me. That's something I feel really strongly about, was that, you know, I'll get back to the equipment, but I'm pretty sure I could now wing an interview. You know, I'm pretty sure if someone said, oh, Ben, by the way, there's so-and-so in that next room, I just want to go interview him, boom, I could do it straight away. One, I would feel that I wasn't taking the interview serious enough. And I never, ever want to feel that I feel like I'm just winging it with that person. Like, that person's given up an hour or an hour and a half of their time for someone who, you know, to them really doesn't mean very much. I think it's incredibly generous of them. And I want to, in return, really make them feel that when I arrive, although I'm not a professional podcaster, that I look and sound and I'm confident enough to kind of give that sense off. So I use my Apple Mac laptop. I've got a MacBook Pro. They look awesome, and two, they never crash. Touch wood, if this does crash, that'd be quite annoying. They look great, and you set that up, and then I've got a Focusrite 2-channel amp. It is a Scarlett 2i2 Focusrite amp. It's got two separate channels. And the advantage of that is that when two people are talking, during the conversation, I can tweak those levels as people are talking. So I can, if someone, you know, leans back and their voice goes really, really quiet, I'm then able to kind of, you know, change the gain so their voice becomes louder or softer. And some people, like, they really lean in, and then you can adjust the gain as well. But also, with the software, you're able to manipulate both channels independently. So that's brilliant. And the Focusrite amp, purely from an aesthetical point of view, is like metallic red gold. And it's a fantastic little amp. And it's powered off the laptop. So essentially with the laptop and that Focusrite amp, I've got two separate microphones. I don't need a power source, because once my laptop's fully charged, I can record anywhere. I mean, I did say in one of the interviews I could record in a field if I want to. I don't know why. And then I heard a podcast with the guy from Adam and Joe. Damn it, what's his name? I can't remember. Anyway, he does a podcast and he actually records himself while walking with his dog. I mean, that really would be... that would be quite a dull podcast if someone was to listen to me doing that. But Adam Buxton, there you go. But I've, you know, when I went to interview Assemble Studios, I was in their meeting room, in the back of their meeting room, and I couldn't get the power cable to reach. I didn't realize that until we were there, but it wasn't a problem, because it gives me complete flexibility to just turn up anywhere. And then, right, what have I got? So I'm just looking. So then I've got two XLR cables, and they give really high quality audio. And then I've actually got two angle poise, like, lamp arms, which come with a microphone stand at the end. And then what microphones have I got? I've got, they are Audio Technica. And they are R2100 USB microphones. Again, you can get cheaper microphones. I got them from America. I got two microphones and they were like, they were 100 quid from America, 120 quid. But in the UK, they're 250 quid or £200 for two microphones, which, again, I know sounds a lot of money, but they look great. And the sound quality is amazing from them. They're specifically for audio, for podcasts and stuff. So, when I set up, I sit down with that person and I set up the laptop and I plug this like really like nice looking Focusrite amp in. I then get my big angle poise, like big black microphone stands. I then put in like, you know, proper big microphones, and I've got like a pop filter. So ironically, when you say it, it does it away. But what I'm going to do is avoid your ears, but it's a little foam cover for the microphone, and I've got it on at the moment, but if I take it off, so now it's off. When you go, you can hear that kind of whistling noise, and then I've put it back on, and it makes a really big difference when people are breathing, and also when people say a noise, it gets it away. And they're all little things that just add up to something much more professional. And I chose like red XLR cables for the microphones, and I've got these. The great thing about the Focusrite amp is, and something that I thought was really, really key, was, again, to create this kind of enclosed sense of atmosphere, was the Focusrite amp has a real-time output direct from the amp, and it's got you can plug a kind of 3.5mm jack into it with a divider. And I've got two really long headphone cables. And I've got these really nice Sony headphones, which are... I bet they don't say on it. MDR-V55. And they're super good quality and they're relatively cheap. But each person wears one. And the really good thing is that it really makes a difference. If someone's like 2 meters away from you on the side of a table... and you've got the headphones on, it feels like they're actually talking in your ear and you don't hear anything around you. And just very slowly, you just feel this sense of enclosure. And I personally think it makes a big difference. So, you know, they're thinking I'm just this random guy who comes in and suddenly I whip out what is, you know, I think it all came to like £500, like apart from the laptop, obviously. But you can use any laptop for that. But yeah, so for like £400 or £500, you've got professional podcast setup, and I actually went on YouTube and just typed in podcast setup until I saw one. And this guy was like, he was holding the microphone, you could hear the quality of the audio, he told me exactly how to set it all up, and I bought everything that he had. Like, I literally went on the website, I'll try and find the link, and I bought everything he had, and I was blown away by how good it was. And then software wise to save money, I use something called Audacity, which is a free piece of software for Mac or Windows. And I'm looking at my computer screen as we're recording, and you can see the levels of the microphones. You can see the sound wave as you're recording. It's totally free, and it records as separate audio tracks. And the great thing is that once you've got both the audio tracks, you can kind of adjust the levels to get it about right. But you then export it as an MP3 or an AAC file, which are two different formats, but they're kind of the same. If you have a podcast and you're listening to this and you're like, oh, what an idiot, I can't believe he's doing like that, just, yeah, please tell me, because I don't know. This seems to be working for me as a setup. So you use Audacity, you do your full audio, you export it as a really nice clean track. But then, you know, with all the best intentions in the world, there will be times when the person leans away from the microphone or takes a drink or suddenly gets a bit animated or very slowly leans away or leans forward. So the levels will vary slightly. So there's another free piece of software. It's super simple to use, called Levelator. And this is like, again, an app for Apple or Windows. And what that does is you literally drag your MP3 or AAC file, drag it directly into Levelator, and it goes through and just makes sure that every bit of audio, irrespective of who's saying it, comes out at the same level. So it takes all the highs and lows of each person. And then you end up getting this super consistent recording, which is brilliant. And you end up with these, you know, considering I've never done it before, and I did a podcast that I was really proud of. It sounded really professional. I mean, God knows what people think of the actual interviewing technique, but audio-wise, it was really good. So to go back to where I was, I had all this equipment. I needed someone to test it on. I'd had like a field test with my mum on holiday and a campaign manager. And then I was like, who can I interview? My poor wife, who has to put up with all my ideas. So she's a primary school teacher and just done a dissertation. So I didn't have any warning. I wanted to kind of throw myself in. I was like, right, I don't know anything about what she does. I'm just going to bring her upstairs into my man cave in the loft, which I'm recording in now. And I'll sit her down and actually interview her. And so like 50 minutes later, we'd had like a really fun chat. I actually like learned quite a bit about teaching. And what was really cool was she enjoyed it as well. And she'd never heard her voice on microphone. And obviously, once you get over that first 20 to 30 seconds, a minute of your own voice, because you can hear your voice so clearly in such crystal quality in your ears. It was really good fun. I didn't know anything about teaching. And that was on the point where I was like, do you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to book my next one. So I will talk about the first podcast and then I'll talk about how I release the podcast and what software I use. So I've actually talked a lot about the podcasts before on the beginning of all the other ones. So I'll kind of skip over them because I've been talking for quite a while now. But again, a recurring theme is if there's one person that's listening to this and smiling and they're enjoying it, and a few other people clicked off, I guess that's fine. Like, this is really a personal kind of enjoyment project. So this is why I think I think podcasts are amazing for anyone. I think it focuses anything you're interested in. And to me, it feels like a real zero pressure situation. Like, no one's expecting me to do it. The cost is non-existent because it's all free. It goes out onto the internet. And if no one listens to it, then I've gained from it by talking to someone that I'm really interested in. And I love doing that. And then I've documented those things. And I actually think if you come at it from a point of view, you really don't mind if no one listens to it and you just do it because you love it. I think inherently the way you talk about it comes across massively. So if there's anyone out there thinking you're doing a podcast, my advice is 100% just do it. Literally, what have you got to lose? I love doing them. So that is the end of the second third. Actually, if you're going on time, this is massively not in thirds, but so we're getting into the last part, which is where I'll talk about how I got the interviews. And so we'll start off with Assemble Studios. Now, in terms of like who I was aiming to try and get on the podcast, I called it the Create More, but then the first people I interview are architects. But if you know anything about Assemble Studios, they're kind of, to me, they're very much on the cusp of theatre, art, architecture. They're young, they're very community based. They don't really have a business model in such that they all kind of work together. They're like this whirling hive of like activity and momentum. And you know, if they need 30 people to do a massive cinema, then in a petrol station, they all club together, they all work together, and they do that. And then if they've only got a few projects on, or they've all got their individual ones, they work from home, they work in there, they do tutoring, and then they all club together again. I mean, as community ideas go, it's wonderful. And I thought for pretty much 95% of the run of the podcast, it was by far the most popular and the one everyone spoke to me about. To me, it also felt like a perfect extension of being at uni, doing what I did, studying architecture. And then I felt that that should have been the next step. And then you only can do big skyscrapers when you're much older. So I was desperate to try and talk to them because I love their website. It has these beautiful images and I really like them. So I'd actually worked with Jane Hall, who is someone that works at Assemble. And I hadn't spoken to her. I worked with her on Broadgate, so like probably 5 years ago now. I worked with her for a couple of months. She left to go back to uni. So I was like, well, okay, I'll email her and ask her, would she be interested in a podcast? And she didn't respond. I didn't get a response. I was like, ugh. And emailed again saying, I really hope I'm not hassling, but you know, I just wanted to check if you're up for doing the podcast. And she was like, oh yeah, this seems to be a recurring thing. Oh yeah, sorry, completely forgot to reply to your email. Yeah, that sounds fine. Why don't you, how do you want to do it? And I was like, well, I hadn't done a podcast with someone I didn't know. And I wanted it to be good. So I actually went over there in the middle of the week, because I hadn't actually received my microphones yet. I'd received everything else. So I was like, well, I can't do it this week, but I can come over and talk to you. So I went over their studio. And again, from a personal exploration point of view, I was desperate to go and see how they worked and how they operated. And I really wanted to see and, you know, how their operations work. And so I went over there. She showed me around everything. But what I did was I wanted to check if my questions sounded meandering or stupid or just anything really. So I had my my headphones, my little Sennheiser headphones, the little microphone, you know, at the lapel point. So again, I used my like podcast app, dangled the microphone over and out my jacket, and then I left it on for like the hour and a half that I was there. And we had such a nice chat. So we ended up sitting down and we ended up talking about loads of really interesting stuff. And I was like, damn it, I wish I bought my podcast equipment. But if that had gone badly, you know, maybe I would have been like, oh God, maybe I can't do this. But it went so, it was such a nice, relaxed chat. I'm not going to say it went really well, but I felt very comfortable. And I think she felt comfortable and she was very eloquent and knew all her stuff and was very open to talking. So I went and sat down with them. And I went back, and on the way on the bus home, listened to the podcast thing. And I was smiling the whole way back because I was like, there we go, I've done it. That's like the first, well, the beta podcast, right? And so I got back and showed Beck and she was like, yeah, suppose. So like, I was like massively overwhelmed with like, I've done it, I've interviewed someone. She's like, well, yeah, you're good at chatting to people. And I'm like, what do you expect? And I was like, well, you know, yay. And she's like, well, I knew it'd be fine. I don't know what you were Yeah, okay, good. So then I went back the following week, sat down with her, and we went through everything we spoke through before. Oh, it was so good. It was so satisfying. I was just full of adrenaline afterwards. Like, I'd done it. I'd done my first podcast and I had it recorded. But man, did I shit myself that I hadn't done that recording. So like, I clicked it all so slowly to make sure I had it all saved, because I get so paranoid now that the recording hasn't worked. It's like my genuine nightmare. And I'll come on to later when I have pretty much lost it. It's the most depressing thing. And so I went back, and then I was like, right, well, I've got a podcast, I've got an interview, now what? So I went back to Mr. Scroobius Pip, and he said, I use Acast. Here's the name of their marketing person. They're really, really good. Because there's places like SoundCloud and things where there's like a sea of audio and there's loads of podcasts on there, and it's really good to get involved with groups and stuff. But I was really keen on using images and stuff. I felt that gave me like a unique edge in podcasts and things. So especially architecture ones. Like, I know there's loads of design ones and stuff, but I think the unique thing, and that I'm really trying to push, is that I guess I'm no different to anyone else. Like, I'm not amazing at anything. I just like chatting to people. And I do think there's the interviews I'm really interested in are ones that I feel like I'm talking to that person. Like, the everyman is talking to a person. So, you know, this idea that, oh my God, imagine if you bumped into like a famous movie star on a plane and you got to chat to them for an hour. How exciting would that be? You know, with no agenda, you just literally just, they want to talk about themselves, you want to talk about them, you want to find out more. So that's really the kind of the vibe that I was going for. So I came back, I did the intro, which was way harder than I thought. I can have a chat, like once I'm going, I'm fine. But to actually have to record, like even for the intro for this podcast, I had to record twice because I thought the first one sucked. I forgot information. And I was actually really nervous. That was the hardest part about the first podcast. So I recorded it. If you listen to it, you can hear it's in three very distinct chunks, because I wrote like exactly everything I wanted to put in. And then I read it back to I read it back, and it was so, so dry and so information based. So I kind of plowed through it, and I was like, do you know what? Fuck it. Just put it out there. Literally no one's going to care. Just put it out there. So then I was like, right, what do I need? I need the theme music, you can get like a copyright-free music on the internet. There's loads of it. And it was like, it took me ages. I went through like 50 different tracks of like, well, I wanted something that was like, not naive, not childish, but kind of fun and friendly and a little bit interesting. And so I found the perfect little royalty-free music, and that worked out perfectly. And then put it on Acast, and then I worked out, I had to do the front cover, which I already done, and the same thing that Scroobius Pip does, he takes a selfie of himself each time with the person, and I loved that. And my God, so annoying, you'll notice on the photos at the end of the series, I keep forgetting to do it. I'm so like full of adrenaline from interviewing them, and I'm so happy it's gone well, I always forget to do it, and I end up having to take a picture of the piece of cardboard next to me, which seemed fine as a one-off, but then the last four I did it in a row. So I went on Acast and I submitted it on Acast, and I had like my publishing schedule, and I did it on Tuesday night, and it went out on like Tuesday night at midnight. And this was the big one for me. And then I went on, I asked Monsieur Pip, if he would be interested, or would he just, please mate, can you tweet about it? That'd be amazing. So he did, and that again was so exciting. There was like 100,000 people who got this tweet from Scroobius Pip saying you should check out this design podcast. And I got like 60 downloads in a day. I was like, oh God, this is gonna be amazing. And it was so exciting, and I put it on Facebook, and loads of people were really nice. And then that was brilliant. I was on a real high then. I thought, oh my God, if I get... My dream was to have 1,000 downloads a month. I was like, that'd be mental, 1,000 downloads a month. And I had 60 downloads. I was like, oh, this is amazing. I'm going to make it. And then the next day was like 20. And then the next day was 5. And then it literally remained at 5, 10, 5, 2, 5, 10, 2, 5, 10, 2. And I was like, oh, just a little bit deflated. And I was like, no, just, it was good because it reminded me that it's exciting to get that kind of response. But then in reality, you're doing it for yourself. And that should always be your goal, to make it as interesting as possible for yourself. And then that will kind of move on. So I was really, really, really happy with that podcast. I'm still really proud of that one because the actual theme hasn't changed at all. I don't feel like the interviewing techniques changed at all. And it went brilliantly. Had loads of really nice responses about that. So I then... David Batchelor was someone who I knew through work. He was a light artist, and we'd worked on Broadgate together. And he's actually like, he looks like your classic art artist, right? He's quite thin and very fit looking, and he wears like cool artist clothing. And I saw him from afar, and I think he was in quite a serious meeting, and I was like, oh god, he looks intimidating, as some well established artist. And then we got stuck between two meetings, like later on, this is like a few months before I asked him to do the podcast. And we had to wait for half an hour between two meetings. One got cancelled. And we were just stuck in a room together. And I started chatting to him, and he was really nice. And I thought, he'd be perfect for a podcast. And he's interesting. He's not an architect. It's another challenge for me because he's very famous. He's well established. So I did tons and tons of research for it. Watched loads of his talks. And I said, I had like a full list of questions, every project I liked. And I think from an interview point of view, I'm probably almost as proud of this one. I'm probably going to say that about loads of them. But this one really felt like a start to finish, really good interview, because he explained everything. And so that was really, really nice. And then when I sat down with him, we were in his massive studio. And I got to go to a studio in Bow, and it is brand new. And I got to visit the whole place, and that's exactly what I wanted. He was like, yeah, of course, you want a cup of tea? I was like, yeah, I'll just set up. And he was like, okay, perfect. So we're in the studio and we're about to do the podcast. And he turns around and I'm pulling microphones and stuff out of my bag. And he's like, sorry, what are we doing? I was like, the podcast. And he was like, right. Sorry, what is a podcast? And I think he thought I was going to just write down the interview and then transcribe it later. And then, as I just said in the beginning part, this theatre and atmosphere. So suddenly I start pulling out microphones, angle poised arms, massive microphones, headphones, amplifiers. And he's like looking at me going, oh, Jesus. and then ended up doing the interview. And he really got into it. And, ended up talking loads about kind of how he started. And the great thing was he was explaining why it was so hard and things. And I loved that. So after that one went out, I then posted it, and very few people had heard him. He didn't have a Twitter account either. So I've been promoting the whole podcast just through Twitter each time. So I then went to, Jane Hall. So for episode number three, I loved Studio Weave. They're again, a very story-based architecture practice, but it's not even like they're architects. I mean, they are architects, but they're kind of design, art, sculpture community again. And I love that. And so Jay Un is one of the directors, the founding directors, and Jane Hall had used to work there. And when we were talking, I said, oh, do you know, I love this Studio Weave project called the Lullaby Factory. It's incredible. And she was like, yeah, I worked on that. I was like, what? Yeah, after Broadgate, I worked at Studio Weave. And I was like, oh. She's like, oh, you should talk to Jay. He's brilliant. He'll give you quite a lively chat. I was like, what do you mean lively? Well, he doesn't mind saying what he thinks. And I was like, oh God, what if he thinks I'm an idiot? That's always my first call. What if he thinks I'm an idiot? So episode number three, this is the first one I didn't do after work. He was like, well, I can do 8:30 in the morning. So I rock up at 8:30. I have no idea what I don't know where their office is. I couldn't find the entrance. And I suddenly see this guy with like flowing black hair, and it's Jay. And he's like, hey, he's wearing flip flops. And we go in, he's slightly hungover. And we start talking, and I'm right next to an air conditioning unit. So the audio quality is not great. He doesn't want to wear headphones, which is fine. But then he kind of leans back, so I'm constantly trying to push the microphone towards him. But what happens is I ended up getting his audio quality right and got mine a bit wrong. And I was like, damn it. And because I'm right next to the air conditioning unit, so I'm a bit quiet in there, which really pissed me off. And but he sounds great, so that's really fun. And then it was great because I'd never met him before. It was the first time I'd done that. I'd never met him. And then so that was really kind of confidence boosting, that I'd never met the guy, and we had a nice chat. But I ended up chatting about half the podcast before we'd even sat down to the podcast. So I go back, I edit the audio, and as like a kind of cautionary tale, I had some like, I didn't have my nice Sony headphones, I had some like crappy Sennheiser ones, and the podcast didn't sound very good. Like, it was sounding really like raspy. And I realized later, only after putting it online, that the headphones had gone. I didn't realize. So there's me like dialing down the treble in the mix, like loads. And I'm actually like making it really flat. And I only realized when I put on my nice Sony headphones, I was like, what a stupid thing to do. So I should say that I edited it all. So once you get the audio clips, the intro, you know, the main interview and the outro, I then edit it all in GarageBand, which is super simple, and you just drag and drop each part and then change the levels and things. But it was around this time that I was starting to like work out what I should say at the beginning of each podcast and what I should say at the end. So the end was always like, they're nice bookends to a podcast, right? I don't think it's great just to go straight in. And so I started, you know, like I would say what's on the podcast and why it's interesting. So the idea is that the first 5 minutes of the podcast is like a trailer for the rest of the podcast. But it also, I mean, the goal is later on is to support, I don't know, galleries or Kickstarter campaigns or anything I'm interested in at that time. So you can record podcasts. So what I'm trying to do with series two is record podcasts, you know, maybe one a week for 4 weeks. That's what I'm trying to do. Record four before Christmas, ideally around Christmas, and then release them every 2 weeks. So it's a kind of a buffer. But then the great thing with that is that you can, I can then record the intro and outro, almost 2 days before or the night before it goes out. And in that respect, I mean, what I really want to do is if there's a friend with a gallery opening or they need support for anything else, that genuinely I could do advertising, and you know, but I think I love the idea of getting involved, and the podcast has given me the perfect thing to get involved. So my dream is that someone's listening to this who does a Kickstarter campaign or does something. It's like, oh, well, Ben just talks about anything. He'll talk to me and find out more about them. That's my dream. So I'm going to kind of fly through the rest of the podcast because they're relatively recent, and I talk about them a lot at the beginning and the end of each podcast. And it'd be great if, you know, if people go back and listen to them. But the first three were the ones that really kind of set the tone and gave me the confidence to kind of go on. And then all the rest from there, I felt really good about doing, like I was really excited about doing them. So episode four was with Jason Bruges, and they're a studio who do like interactive architecture. And I actually went to like their studio at like relatively busy time of the day, and I met the director and I sat in there, and they were really impressed with all the audio equipment I had. And then for the Jason Bruges one, I recorded that, put it on up on Acast, and then in the morning I was like, right, I'll go on Instagram, I'll post on there, I'll go on Facebook, post on there, but the big one's Twitter. So I asked Jason Bruges to tweet that, and he tweeted it. And just to give you an idea of how Twitter works, so I was blown away by this stat and then also kind of slightly disheartened by this stat. But so Jason Bruges has, let's say, 20,000 followers or 10 to 15,000 followers. His design studio have 5,000 followers. So they both tweeted it. And then Scroobius Pip also picked this one up. So that's, you know, let's say 140,000 followers. And then Make tweeted it, my architecture practice, and not mine, the one I work for, and then that was another 20,000, and then Ken tweeted it, Ken Shuttleworth, the director, that was another. So you're looking at around 200,000 people on their feeds will have seen a retweet or a tweet. I'm not sure exactly how it works, but that's a shitload of people. And I was like, this is it, this is going to be amazing. And only about, I think it was something like 70 people or 50 people like downloaded it on that day or clicked on it. So I was like, oh, so it's kind of this kind of, I think Twitter's great, and I've got a lot of interviews through that, and I've got like kind of groundswell support through Twitter, and it's been a great way to promote it. But it just shows that, you know, 200,000 people, 50 to say 60 downloads, that is a massive hit ratio of people to downloads. So yeah, so that was kind of really eye-opening. And then, so we're kind of nearing the hour mark. So I've gone on way longer than I wanted to. But if you're still listening, this is like, for me, this is a real kind of way to document what I did. So in a year's time, I can listen back to this and go, Jesus, Pen, what are you going on about? And then episode 5 was with Scroobius Pip, because I actually struggled. Two people dropped out. They were like, we're too busy, we can't do a podcast. And I was like, shit, I didn't want to ask Scroobius Pip until the end. Because for me, that was like, that was again, one of the dreams of the podcast. Imagine if I got to interview Scroobius Pip, that'd be so cool. So I was like, Pip, do you mind, can I come over to yours? I'll dimension at the drawing show I've got and I can interview you. He was like, yeah, sure. I was like, wow, this is way faster than I wanted to do it. Oh, am I ready for this? I'm ready. And went round, and that was the most relaxed of all of them I've been. I know that sounds ridiculous and he's the most famous, but I knew so much about him by then that I was like a real fanboy geeking out, and I got to chat to him and I was like, oh, so happy with that interview. It was brilliant. It was like, yeah, it was a bit of an anticlimax afterwards, because I was like, oh man, I've done the dream I set out to do. Where to go now? And then the week after, someone else was like, can we move it to 2 weeks away? And I was like, well, I'm not going to pester someone for a podcast. So I was like, yeah, sure. And then, I'm going to go way past the hour mark. I hope you're enjoying this. So actually, I recorded the Ken Shuttleworth one, which is actually episode 7, before the Alistair Parvin one, which is episode 6, and he's from WikiHouse. But what happened with the Ken Shuttleworth one was, I was like, well, can I ask Ken? Can I interview my own boss? That just sounds like crapping on your own doorstep, doesn't it? But, nah, go on. So I just went and sat down next to him, and I was like, Ken, can I interview the podcast? And he was like, yeah, sure. Where do you want to interview me? And I was like, in a meeting room. And then I realized the acoustics are appalling in our meeting rooms for microphone. They're fine for a meeting. They're nice and bouncy and stuff. But for an audio thing, you want kind of really good quality sound. So we've got this like broom cupboard and it's just been emptied out. And I was like, I can make that broom cupboard soundproof. And he was like, okay. All right. Bearing in mind, this is 2 days away. So, you know, like the MacGyver professional that I am, I propped up two massive bits of 2x4 with a blanket on. Looked in, I was like, done, that'll do it. It's like a dust sheet. And bless our like human resource manager, Vivian, she looked at it and was like, you can't interview Ken in a broom cupboard with sheets on the wall, Ben. Come on, for God's sake. I was like, wow, come on, looks great. So Ken was like, right, well, how about you just, no, this is Vivian. She was like, how about you just find out how much some acoustic material is? So I went online, found these like acoustic walls. I think it costs like 450 quid, these panels. They're like those grey egg crate foam. They arrived the next day at like 5 in the evening. And I was interviewing Ken at 11 o'clock the next day. So I stayed until like 9 o'clock at night, put some nice red chairs in there, some really nice felt chairs to dampen the sound. Like half a meter above the ground and then 2 meters high, I just wrapped the room in this foam. And then, thank God, it was all done by the time Ken came in. And what was really interesting about the Ken one is he's basically the head of a very, very large company. And I'd never really understood the full kind of importance of the marketing department. That's not that they don't do an amazing job. I'd never had to find out what they did. And like, when they heard I was interviewing Ken, they were like, well, what are you going to say? I was like, well, I don't know. I've not really written down questions. And they were like, well, you know, he's in the press. So it would be good if we could see the questions. And I was like, oh, okay. And then thank God I did, because I like wrote all the questions. I was going to ask loads about his history. And they were like, maybe shield away from some of those topics. And luckily I did. But the interview went really, really well. But it was the first time, because, okay, another dream was to interview Thomas Heatherwick. Because I know someone that works there, and I also tried to get James Dyson on the podcast. You know, like, go big, right? I bet you're thinking, you really tried to get bloody James Dyson? But interviewing Ken gave me a real eye opener to what it's like to be running these big companies, right? Because you know, you want to try and focus how the media perceives the company and stuff, because you know it's really, really important when you're up at this level. And that was really interesting to think, you know, suddenly. Like, there's me going, well, why wouldn't Thomas Heatherwick sit down with me? And then I was like, hang on, why would Thomas Heatherwick sit down? That's utterly ridiculous. What does he stand to gain from that, other than me getting a really famous person on a podcast? So that's still a dream in the pipeline. But yeah, so that was really, really cool. And then I was all up and running. I had this like soundproof recording studio at Make. So Alistair Parvin from Wiki House was number six, episode number six. And I was like, he's like, I don't have a meeting room. I mean, they've got one of those cool like group offices. And he was like, I was like, well, what are the odds that I now have an office? So I brought him in. I had a great chat with him. And we learned about so much stuff again. So, and he was kind of really inspiring because he was around the same age as me and he'd done like so much cool stuff. And that kind of made me just think, you know, he was just doing his own thing. And he's doing like the Wiki House and stuff. And you should definitely go back and listen to it. It's like open source architecture. And so even though I'd interviewed Scroobius Pip, Ken Shuttleworth, all these other people, the Alistair Parvin one ended up being by far the most popular one, as in before I later get into iTunes and stuff. People loved that interview because I think especially I realized that my audience, so people who knew me, are in like architecture and design. So when I interviewed like Scroobius Pip, a musician they'd not heard of, they were like, yeah, you think he's famous, but we'd not actually heard him. Some of my friends had, a lot of them had. But suddenly when I interviewed Alistair Parvin, everyone and Assemble Studios, everyone knew who they were and everyone was super interested. So they were the two most popular ones, you know, above Ken Shuttleworth, who's like, you know, famous architect. So that was really, really interesting just to see, because on Acast, you can see the kind of spiking and stuff of like where people download, at what time of the day, you know, what day they download, whereabouts in the world, whereabouts in the country, which city. So that was really, really interesting, you know, seeing the power of Twitter and trying to work out my audience base. And then I interviewed Sue Butcher, who's like a social media expert and is, you know, she's got 20,000 followers. And because her followers aren't just following her because she's famous, they love social media and the stuff that she does. She's got quite a strong engagement with her Twitter followers. So when we did the podcast with her and then we released it, that network of people that she invests in so heavily on Twitter, they hoovered up that podcast as well, and she heavily promoted it. So again, that was a really, really positive one. But yeah, so we're getting up to the end of the podcast and the end of the series download. So I will start wrapping this up. So thank you so much for listening. And again, please tweet in if, Ben, shut the fuck up, you're going on for ages. So then at around episode 8, in my head, I was going to do 25. I was going to do one every 2 weeks for a year. That was my goal. And I was really struggling to kind of find people past these 10 that I got. There was just a natural lull and I was struggling to get people, and I didn't want to like just say yes to anyone, please copy on the podcast, I'll look for anyone, just someone to fill the airtime. I really didn't want to get like that, and it was stressing me out. And so I was talking to my wife and she was like, why don't you just wrap it up at 10? That's great, just a first series, and then you can do another one when you've kind of worked out who you want to interview. And the second she said that, I was like, yeah, it's a really good idea. Just that the weight dropped off my shoulders. And then ironically, I then said that on the Sue Butcher one. On episode 9, which is with Chris Romilly, where from Studio Octopi, I said at the beginning and the end of that one, this will be my last episode, the penultimate episode, sorry. And that suddenly, to like the day that came out, I had two really, really nice people tweet me going, don't stop doing them. One of them, I've mentioned their names already, one of them was like, we put you, you know, I tell my students to listen to you. So you're kind of on a listening list as part of our uni thing for architects. I was like, that's really nice. I didn't know this person. They had no reason to say it. So that was really nice. And then another guy saying, no, just keep doing it. Keep doing it. So, and I had a really nice tweet, like a text chat, tweet chat with him. And I was like, oh, well, that makes me feel pretty good. And then that day, suddenly I had this massive spike of downloads. Like, I'm just looking at the stats now in front of me. It was like, bearing in mind, I'd had 60 was the highest I'd ever had in a day. I had 120 and I was like, wow, people are really digging the Chris Romilly one. I must finally be getting the momentum up, right? And then I get this email from Acast, and I didn't realize that 2 days before, I noticed this slight build up, but 2 days before, Acast had put it on their popular list. And I was starting to get a few more curious people downloading it. And they sent it to iTunes. And it suddenly, on that day, popped into their news and noteworthy. So the head of marketing for Acast, they're constantly trying to promote interesting podcasts. And they quite liked mine. And that went on, and it got sent to the iTunes kind of curator, and they liked it as well. And they liked the logo, which is why the, in his colourful, professional-looking logo, they really liked it. And man, when that went on iTunes, suddenly I was getting 120 to 150 downloads a day. And I think the way they do it on that News and Noteworthy, so if you go on your iPhone, sorry, Android users, you don't get to enjoy this part of the podcast. If you go on your iPhone, they've got this like banner in the middle of the podcast saying News and Noteworthy. And I think they put one on and one drops off every day for a month. So there's like 30 you can choose from. So for like the 30 days that I was on there, bearing in mind, I think I just hit the 1,000 download mark. So I had I'd had well over 1,000 downloads, but my dream, this was, remember, my dream at the beginning was to have 1,000 downloads in 1 month. And I got to 1,000 downloads in a month, and I was like, I was so chuffed that like I'd set out to do something, and you know, lots of people might not like it, but some people do, which is, I love the fact that that's okay, that's fine, and I feel comfortable knowing that, and this is just something that I love doing. And I got to 1,000 downloads, and I was like, wow, this is amazing, like, I can't believe I'm now going to end it at 10, right? And like, so instead of having any sort of break, I just went straight into like organizing this and then trying to get a load more people. Which I'll come to in a minute. Actually, I'll do that at the end of the podcast. And then I was getting like 150 downloads a day for 30 days, right? So suddenly, like at the end of the iTunes thing, I was on like 4,500 downloads. I'd had 3,500, nope. Yeah, something like 3,500 downloads in 30 days. So I was like, man, that's amazing. But it kind of just, it made me trip and fall. Like, I was like, shit, suddenly I need to get someone really big for the next one, because I've got this like massive audience like waiting for it. But, you know, it's very difficult to work out who's actually downloading it, who's clicking on it, listening to it for a bit, who's staying with it. So as I said at the beginning, it's the subscribers that I'm really proud of. So now we've dropped off. So like, episode number 10 was Victoria Thornton from Open City, and the Chris Roma Lee was like a Kickstarter campaign, which I loved. And Victoria Thornton was Open City, which these, they're kind of things around architecture and design and like storytelling and things, which I loved, and making architecture open for anyone. And these are all themes that I really, really enjoyed. And you should listen to them. They're really good. So episode 9 and 10 come out. I have this massive explosion on iTunes, and then I decided to have a break. You know, I'm renovating our house and it's just taking up all my time. And then suddenly the iTunes, I dropped off that 30-day thing, and then suddenly the downloads have gone back down to like 10 or 15 a day. But that's because I haven't released another podcast again. But I can see on the days that I release a podcast, I've got like 200. And I know that's the second I hit download, so they're the subscribers. But that's kind of that is the story of the podcast. And I'm really sorry if I've just been waffling on, but it was just something I really want to get off my chest. It's kind of this like time capsule of information. And I fully intend to do another series of 10 and then do another one of these, and there'll be different trials and issues and stuff. And I'm trying to be as open, as honest and possible. And I hope that you're appreciating that. And please kind of tweet me and stuff at like create more podcasts. But I just thought, I'm going to bring this up now. I'm going to explain. So if I go to shows overviews, right, and then go to statistics. So on Acast, when you put a podcast on there, you can see. So I've got this like the day that I first released the podcast. I've got this big green, like it looks like a mountainous green range, and it's a very like almost at sea level for quite a long time. And then you can see when I go on iTunes, you can see the day that it's on there. There's this 30-day period from the 1st of October 2015 to the 1st November. This like massive, well, to me on mine, because they're very low at the beginning, you can just see it very gradually getting up, and it's got this average line, you know, like a median line going across the whole thing. And when I did episode 10 with Victoria Thornton, she heavily promoted it, and I had 358 downloads in one day, which was absolutely amazing. It just shows you the power of iTunes and stuff. And that was pretty much all through iTunes. But I'll wrap up on like, so total downloads so far have been 4,752, which I know for a normal big podcast, that's nothing. But for, to me, it was massive. And I've got this like huge world globe of where people have been listening. So as you'd imagine, United Kingdom is winning out there with just over 3,000. But inside of that, you've got predominantly London, but then like Lewisham, Nottingham. There's like 50 to 100 in like all around the country. And then actually there's like quite a few in Ireland, surprisingly, like a lot in Dublin and in Cork. And then I've got like almost 100 in the United States, and we've got them in, Weehawken, Portland, in Cupertino, New York City, Brooklyn, Hollywood, San Francisco. What's kind of cool as well is I know there's a friend who lives in San Francisco, and I can pretty much tell he's listened to two of my podcasts, because I also had, there's ones in Australia, South Africa, Japan, Malaysia, New Zealand, Italy, Brazil. God, it goes on. Switzerland, Tanzania, Spain. And I know that my very good friend Craig lives in Canada and he lives in Toronto. And I can see that in Toronto, there's been one download. So, yeah. I'm sure it's not quite that accurate. But yeah, so that is the very long-winded story of how the podcast happened and how I did the whole thing. And any questions, please tweet me, please. Yes, create more podcast. And so thank you so much for listening. I will end this, and then in the recap at the end, I want to explain what I'm doing for Series 2. So that's it. That is the end of Series 1 and the end of the making of. So thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye. Well, there you go. That was the making of the Create More podcast by Ben Stewart. So, I do go on, don't I? But I really, really, really like doing, talking about the podcast, and it's such an important thing that I feel like I do. Not just, you know, I'm not saying it's amazing. I'm just saying for me, I really enjoy doing it. And I said to have a break. Anyway, as I was saying, I won't waffle on anymore, that I already started organising episode series 2. And what was really cool was what pushed it forward was I actually got a tweet from, as I said in episode 10, I actually got a tweet from Wooden Overcoats asking if I would come down and interview them. I was like, yeah, of course I do. So I kind of, as I was saying at the beginning, or kind of in the middle of this, that I just kind of want to keep trying new stuff and doing new cool things. So obviously the format of the show won't change. Maybe I'll change the theme music. I don't know. Go crazy. Who knows? Maybe I've even put bed music at the beginning. I literally don't know how crazy I might go. But I want to try. And so I haven't interviewed two people at the same time. So for the Wooden Overcoats one, I'm going to interview their both directors if they're both available on the same time. And we're going to do it in their recording studio, hopefully with their recording studio equipment. So that'd be really cool. I'm also interviewing Fred Mills from B1M, who started his own internet consultant company all about BIM, which is amazing because he's like young cool guy and is like trying to, I think they're trying to get 1 million people to subscribe to the B1M website. Lofty ambition, but awesome. And then who else have I got organized? There is a guy who does between the liner notes. It was something that popped up on Acast that I listened to, and he did exactly the same as me. He started off doing lots of podcasts, interviewing people, and then he's actually moved to like documentary style making, and he's done all about MTV and other ones, and it's really interesting. And he's in New York, and I tweeted him about how much I enjoy his podcast, and he tweeted straight back, and I was like, have you ever done a Skype interview? And he was like, yeah, I would record it with my expensive recording equipment and you would your end. We would Skype, but only you would hear what's in the Skype thing, and then we would merge the two audio tracks. And I was like, amazing, I haven't done that before. All right, wicked. And then we were trying to do some virtual reality stuff at Make with our Oculus Rift headsets. We were struggling with a bit of the kind of computer power stuff. And so one of the guys I work with, his girlfriend works for a place called Unit 9. So I was like, can we go and meet the creative director? So we met one of them and we went over there, and they showed us all this amazing stuff. I mean, genuinely mind-blowing virtual reality stuff. You know, that's the future I see of like animation stuff, all done with like computer game engines and stuff. So he was like, yeah, sure, I'll come on the podcast, show you what we're working on. I was like, brilliant. All right, there you go, that's four. And then I wanted to do a bit of a special, like a really interesting Kickstarter. And I love this idea of kind of crowdsourcing. So I actually found out that there's two guys in my office, one who's just started a Kickstarter campaign for the lightest foldable bike, which is just... he's just done off his own back. And he's like getting the carbon fiber frame done by ProDrive. And I was like, I really want to find out how he did that. And then there's also a guy in our office called Sam, who the other guy's called Peter. There's a guy in our office called Sam who did a book about what it's like to be dyslexic and has already done a really successful Kickstarter campaign. It's his second one. And he's like really young. Bastard. So I haven't asked them yet, so if they're listening to this, consider this your invite. But what I want to try and do is interview those two separately and put them maybe on two shorter podcasts, maybe half an hour each, and release them, you know, within 24 hours of each other, give them both like equal weighting or whatever. And I thought that'd be really cool. And then the dream, Thomas Heatherwick. That is a real pie in the sky one, but you know, as I said, go big. And then someone I'm really trying to chase is Alain de Botton, who is a really famous philosopher and also is involved in architecture and stuff. So Living Architecture is called. And I emailed their like media consultant or like guru, whatever, their advisor. And they said maybe in March, February, March. I was like, all right. Johnny Tucker, who's someone else I've been trying to get. He's the editor of Blueprint magazine. He said he can do January, February next year. And I was like, okay, cool. So there you go. That's like seven already. Factory 15. I don't know if you saw Kibwe from Factory 15. He did Robots of Brixton. They're like a animation unit from the Bartlett, and they moved and set up their own practice. And we're working with them, make, and they do these incredible renders. But he does their like movie animation department. So there you go. Shake all that information off, guys. That was a good podcast workout. So if you're still listening, man, you should listen to the Joe Rogan podcast, because you're obviously a long podcast lover. And if you enjoyed this, definitely listen to his, because if you like the waffle, he goes on for hours, 3 hours his podcasts are. So I imagine no one will get to this end. I tell you what, tweet me, hashtag I did at create more podcast. And then I'll know, like the one of you, literally no one. I could say anything right now, no one's listening. hashtag I did. Okay, thank you so much. And series 2 will be coming out in December. And you guys are amazing. And to all the subscribers, thank you very much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.